All right. Well, with nearly 20 years' experience in the music industry, Andre Caden Black has written for indie and major labels across the USA, Asia, and Canada, such as Sony ATV, Warner, Universal, Atlantic, 21 Entertainment, and Arista BMG. He has also toured extensively across Canada and overseas, opening for artists such as Alicia Keys, One Republic, Jason Mraz, and Simple Plan. Andre has worked with countless award-winning talent, including multi-platinum artist Fifi Dobson, Francesco Yates, Grammy Award-winning talent agency Chris Smith Management, Canadian Idol winner Brian Mello, who's from Hamilton, by the way, and Juno-winning blues guitarist Steve Strongman, members of My Darkest Days, Buck Cherry, Our Lady Peace, and Boston. Today on the SCN Podcast Show, an exclusive for MusicLifeMagazine.net, we welcome recording producer and songwriter Andre Caden Black.
Welcome to the Shane Christopher Neal Podcast. Shane's a TV and radio personality, international event host, A&R label rep, co-founder of BS Live Rocks Entertainment Group, an all-around epic guy. This podcast is sponsored by Music Life Magazine. Check out all Shane's podcasts at musiclifemagazine.net. So much to talk about with so little time. Here's your host, Shane Christopher Neal.
All right, thanks to the Maysides, as always, for opening the show here on the SCN Podcast, musiclifemagazine.net. And it's kind of ironic, maybe, that the Maysides, rather, are in the opening because we have a gentleman on the phone that produces the Maysides, as well as a number of other local bands, Andre Caden Black. How are you, sir?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. And I it's funny because we were just talking before we went to tape here that I got your name initially, I believe, from Danny Lamb. And yep. And then it was the Maysides and a few others in Niagara. So you have a Niagara connection, and that's really cool because you're based out of Toronto, correct?
Yes, based out of Toronto, but I do work with a lot of bands. I have worked with a lot of bands from Niagara. Absolutely.
And there's a couple other ones. Stereo Sunrise?
Yes, Stereo Sunrise. We just finished an EP for them, and we just got it back from mastering. It sounds great, so keep an eye out for their new stuff.
So you're a musician at heart, right? And I want to talk about how you got started, you know, to become a producer. So give us a little insight into that and kind of how you got involved in the production side of music.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I've been in the industry for a pretty long time. I was lucky enough to be in a band at a very young age and to be signing major management deals and record deals, you know, just right out of high school, actually. So after those projects fizzled, I ended up being more of a session guitar player. So I would do session gigs in the studio, and I joined Fifi Dobson's band, and we did some touring and some TV shows and whatnot, and that was really fun. That went on for about a year, and then I found that it was a little bit too, you know, the repetition just didn't really agree with me. I was kind of missing the whole creative aspect of the art. So I called up a mentor of mine at the time who worked for the management company I was working with, which is Chris Smith Management. And, you know, I had a conversation with him, and he's like, you know what, let's switch some gears and have you, I'm going to set you up with some songwriting sessions with some of our artists and see how you do. So I ended up working with a few of their artists, and the songs that we were creating were really great. He was really happy. And then it just kind of progressed from there. I just started getting, you know, more hands-on with these artists. And then I took my talents to the studio and produced. The first band I produced was Black Collar Union's first album. And that was, that was about 6 years ago. And that first record won the 97.7 Rock Search competition. So
that's right. And I'm a big, yeah. I'm a big fan of that band. We did a TV spot with them, I think a year ago, maybe a year and a bit ago. And yeah, I mean, killer band. Holy shit.
Oh man. We're going back in the studio with them this spring, and the songs are going to be incredible. Yeah. Lots of great surprises with those guys. So
when you talk about songwriting, do you learn how to be a good songwriter? Is it just a talent that
people have like yourself? I mean, how do
that's
you know
a really
that, you,
good,
that you're a good
that's
songwriter?
A really good question, man. That's a really good question. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think that like you can learn how to songwrite as far as structure goes, and doing it enough will teach you how to do it. But I, you know, on the other hand, I do think that there's a natural ability and an instinct that you kind of just can feel something that is right or wrong. You know what I mean? You're like, it just doesn't feel right, you know, or it feels like we should go to this chord. I don't know why. There's no reason behind it. It's just a feeling thing. And I think that is naturally instinctive as well. So
some producers, I take it, are not songwriters, right? So they just produce the record.
Yep.
You, I take it, would engage then with your artist to help them with the songs, or give me that part of it. Like if I'm a band coming in and I say, you know, we want you to produce the record, do you sit down in pre-production and kind of go over the songs, make sure that you feel that they're going in the right direction? Do you just say, sure, guys, come on in and let's record it?
Yeah, no, I'll probably always preview the songs. And like, I work very closely with a couple other producers, one of them being Tal Weisman. He's the guitarist of the Ascot Royals. And we kind of sit with the band in pre-production, and we have to make sure that the choruses are hitting like they should. The verses are moving along, and make sure all the theory parts make sense, and just try to improve the song as much as possible. Sometimes we'll get a band coming in and they'll have, you know, four songs that they want to record, and we make some changes to three of them, and one of them only need a couple of shifts in structure, and that's it. But, you know, for the most part, we make sure that we go over all their writing to make sure that it's structurally sound and the best that it can be. So,
in some of the stuff you sent me, I thought this was great. You were talking about why bands need to stop chasing mainstream radio, rather, if you want to build a long-term career in music. Why is that? And why do so many people want mainstream radio? I mean, I guess other than the obvious that it just, you know, you figure, hey, I'm going to be driving in my car and I hear Ed Sheeran every other song, so why can't I hear mine every other song?
I know. It's weird. I think it's an old school way of thinking, to be honest with you. I feel like times are changing, and being on the radio isn't really going to break a band. So I guess I'll go into this a little bit. I read a great article on a blog called Pop of Color, and she went into this situation, and I kind of agree exactly what she was saying. And I can explain exactly why I think bands should and artists should kind of stay clear of the radio. So I'll go over like how the programming works, right? So on large stations, ones owned by media corporations, the song catalog can be decided by their headquarters, and then they give all the top 40 songs for the whole chain to play. So in order to get a song on the radio, you have to hire someone that's called a radio tracker.
Right.
And their job is to, take radio programmers out to lunch, convince them to play your song. And usually you're an unknown artist at the time. In Canada, artists and bands can apply for factor grants, and they can compete against everyone else to hire a radio tracker. But it costs a lot of money to break a pop song on the radio. We're talking about $500,000, $1 million. And you have to kind of understand how mainstream radio works. You know, mainstream radio is in the business of not making listeners change the stations when commercials come on. You know, the tried and true way of making people feel comfortable when turning to their favorite station is to play unthreatening songs by artists they know. That's why, you know, political protest songs and super edgy tracks don't get much play unless they're charting on Billboard.
Right.
So, exactly. So the price stations can charge for ads depends on how many people listen to and how long. Therefore, playing a song by a small artist with very little buzz at rush hour is a huge risk for them. Many bands assume that to get radio play, they have to compete and prove themselves more worthy than every other band trying to get played too. They're actually wrong thinking this. You know, these bands are actually competing against everyone already on the air. They need to convince the program director to swap out the Bruno and the Selena and the Rihanna for them. Once again, it costs a lot of money.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'll just finish this. And then my thought here. So let's talk about Billboard. You know about the Hot 100, right?
Yeah, of course.
So different factors can come into play, like when songs chart, you know, affecting their position. The main factors are obviously sales, streaming, YouTube, and radio. It takes about 150 on-demand streams to equal a single sale, to give you an idea.
Wow.
So I guess so where I'm going with this is that whenever a song that's not super commercial sounding charts because the artist has an insanely loyal fan base, radio takes a while to catch on. They want to seem cool, but also be in the safe zone, having enough people recognizing the song that they won't charge the station. So the main takeaway from this is radio doesn't really make the hits; they just play them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Would you say today then, with all of the media that's available, you know, the YouTubes and your streaming, and there's more opportunity for an artist today than ever before then because there's so many platforms to put them on?
Absolutely. That's exactly it. And that's why we have so many artists out there. Anyone can do it. It's super easy. It's not like before where it's like you'd go in, spend buckets of money back in the 90s to go into a studio, record an album, and then what do you do from there? You kind of like sell tapes at shows. That's right. All you did, so it's easier now.
As a producer, do you give advice then to the bands that you work with and say, if I was you, this is what I would do to get your song out there? Or is that, that's more of a management role. I understand that, but some producers just produce the record and say, I don't give a shit what you do with it. Just go and figure it out. But do you work? You seem to be the type of guy though, that you take an interest in the people that you work with and that you're going to give them some advice, whether it's to say, hey, you need to piggyback on a Canadian tour where, with a fair sized band, you need somebody to get you on that to get your exposure. So people see you live or whatever it might be. Right.
Absolutely. I mean, we have so many artists contacting us, and it's very important that we choose the right ones because their success is our success ultimately, right?
Absolutely.
So that's it.
So let's talk about the next thing here with Abbey Road Studios in London. So that just happened last year. Is that right? In 2017?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that seems real exciting. And I'm sure everybody has heard of Abbey Road Studios in London. Did you do the whole album for IOV?
We did the whole record. Yeah.
I mean, and I messaged you today, Millions of People. What a great song. I had never heard it. And as I was doing some research, to talk to you, and I'm going through this, I was like, holy crap, that's a good song. And talk about your experience and how did they even get to Abbey Road Studio? Because I'm sure it's not an easy process to say, hey, we're coming to London to record in your studio over here,
Yeah. So Abbey Road was already booked before they hired me. But I can tell you the backstory is just like, I know their singer, Darren Gooder, used to live in England. So he had a few friends and he was just casually sitting at a bar with his friends. And he was talking about, we're going to go back in the studio, record these tracks. And I guess someone was joking, be like, well, I got a connection to Abbey Road. If you want to go record there. And it was kind of, people were kind of laughing. And the next day, Darren's like, that would be pretty cool. So he actually called the guy back and said, hey, you mentioned Abbey Road just right. Do you think you can get us in there? He's like, hey, if you're serious, I can contact my buddy and see what we can do. So after, he contacted Darren back and said, hey, they're interested in hearing your package because you have to be accepted to record there, right?
Wow.
So you have to go through a long process. So, he submitted, the material, he submitted what they were doing and they got approved. So it took, we had to get insurance because we were filming a documentary in there. So there was a lot of paperwork we had to go through, but once it was all done, that was it. So
tell me about your experience being there. I know that I read a few things that it is miraculously huge inside compared to what it looks like on the outside.
Absolutely.
So take me through the vibe. You walk in the front door, you walk up the stairs, you walk in the front door, and kind of what you experience when you're there.
Yeah, I mean, even just walking through the gates, even walking through the front gates was incredible because you had to push through because there's so many people just hanging out outside at all times, trying to take photos, trying to look in the doors. And I'm talking from the time we got there at 10 a.m. to the time we left at midnight, there were still people, trying to take photos on the little catwalk there.
Right.
Zebra catwalk. Anyway, so we walk up the doors and it's pretty new when you first walk in. It's all redone, the front office. So you walk in, you had to sign in, you walk through, someone greets you. We got greeted from Chris Bolster. He's an amazing house engineer at Abbey, and he worked on the Foo Fighters record and a bunch of other awesome records. We walked down the hall, and right in the hallway is the old portion. And honestly, it's just, there's big signs no cameras, no photography, no video. So I'm like walking down, and it's just gear. So old tape machines, like pushed to the side of the walls. The rug kind of still smells like that old 60s smell that you walk into your old school and you're like, oh man, this still smells the same. Well, seriously, man, it was real. There was beetle dust everywhere. So, we ended up walking into Studio 2 where we did the record, which is the most popular one where the Beatles recorded most of their stuff. And the upstairs where the board was, the console was all redone, but the live room was just massive. And it had such a great sound to it, you know, when we were recording the drums.
You can fit like an orchestra in there, correct? Like
that's Studio 1 usually. Okay. They do orchestras. Yeah. Studio 2 is still pretty big, but not as big as Studio 1. Yeah.
And they have pianos there, I believe, as well from the.
Oh, my God. And so many pianos. They have the exact pianos that were used on the Beatles records.
Wow.
So, if you go over to my Instagram page at Andre Caden Black, there's a ton of photos you guys can check out. And I go into detail about the years of the gear and like, it's pretty interesting. So.
So how long were you there to record this? And what were kind of, you said that, you know, it's pretty strict rules there. So you had all day and night, as long as it took, did you have a week, a month?
Yeah. It's very, very, very expensive to record there. I think like on total, I think the band ended up spending somewhere between $30,000 and $40,000.
Wow.
So I think we spent 4 days there. We were there for about 8 days and four of them were in the studio. And then the rest of them, the band did some press and stuff like that. But it was incredible, honestly.
So it's IOV, I'm a Vintage. Now you said they're not a band now. Is that right?
Yeah, they just split. Yeah, I know, right? Like they're just getting the ball rolling.
You know,
some stuff went down with the band and they decided to part ways.
And they're from Brantford?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I read that. So
their drummer's from Niagara though, Matt.
Right. Okay. And I recognize when I watched the video, I've seen him before.
Yep. So very talented drummer.
So obviously this is probably the biggest studio as far as popularity that you've recorded in.
I don't think it's the biggest studio popularity in the world.
Yeah, I was going to say. So,
absolutely.
No, you have a team of people, I take it, that you work with, right? And it's always about a team. So maybe let's talk about that and kind of what makes your company roll.
Yeah, so like, you know what? It's very important to me to work with high vibrational people, very positive people. I think that has, you know, more, that'll bring more positive outcome than anything else. So some of the people I work with, like I mentioned before, Tal Weisman, he's an amazing, such a talented producer, songwriter, and mix engineer. So we work together on a lot of, probably about 70% or 80% of all the artists that I come through. And then I also work with another great mix engineer, producer, songwriter, Jordan Postorino. He's more pop, R&B, you know, really, really talented with that kind of stuff. He's worked with JRDN, Divine Brown, Julie Black, and we do a lot of work together. And then also Duncan Coots from Our Lady Peace. We songwrite together quite a bit for Sony ATV. We've done a ton of writing for artists. He's going on tour actually, and I'm hoping to work with him on some new projects this year. And then I've worked with another great vocal teacher. Her name is Teresa Sorello. She's honestly one of the best, and you know, just you know, drum techs and all sorts of people that I kind of work with, videographers. You know,
when it comes to you know, you're talking about some of the partners in songwriting. How many songs do you write every week? How many songs do you write a week? And how many those songs do Sony ATV or you write for a number of different labels, right? You know, except.
You know, I think we were really focusing on writing for labels. I think it probably about 3 years. So we would get together every day and just write. But since it's on spec, it's really tough to like make a lot of money and kind of put your time, because you're gambling at that point. So writing for other labels, I've kind of shifted my energy now and I'm more writing for artists that I'm working with.
Right.
You know, so I have more control in where they go. And, you know, it just takes one artist, you know, to break that we work with, which I think is a much, you know, easier route.
Well, the odds are a lot better, right?
Obviously. Exactly. Totally. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Who would be, I guess, I don't know, the biggest act, I guess, or artist or band that, that you've written with or worked with? Is that?
Oh man, I don't even like.
Is that a fair question? I mean, they're all good.
Totally
they're all big,
fair.
But I mean,
I mean, it depends on what you think big is.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, I've written with, you know, members of Boston, you know, which was really fun.
That's
in
crazy.
Nashville.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I've written with, members of, Buckcherry. I've written with, guys from My Darkest Days. I've written with, you know, Duncan all the time from Our Lady Peace. I mean, you know, B.P. Dobson, you know, I've worked with, a lot of artists. You know, we did a residency in Nashville for like 3 months and we got to meet a lot of cool people there too. So, yeah.
What do you think of the Canadian music scene right now? In general, I mean, I know there's different genres of it, but I mean, what do you think of music in Canada right now as the Junos come up and where it's sitting? Are you happy with it? Do you think there's a lot of room for improvement? Is it the best place ever?
Well, I think, you know, Canada is really making its mark in the entertainment industry. And I don't even think that it's just music because we've had a lot of pop stars and hip hop stars do really well here. You know, Drake, Justin Bieber, Alicia Cara now is killing it. She just won the Grammy. So, you know, Toronto especially is putting a mark on the map of the country. You've got the Raptors. I don't know if you follow basketball, but they're like number one in their conference right now. It's amazing.
The Leafs are actually winning.
Yeah. Like, you know, people hit the Leafs. Yeah. Yeah, totally. But yeah, but we'll see where it goes. But you know what? Canada is a really, really buzz place, especially Toronto right now. I know guys in the States that are coming down and they're sticking their noses in what's going on. So, you know, I work with a great, I also work with a great company out of Nashville called PCG Universal, and they're like a development group. And we're doing a panel at Canadian Music Week, and you know, they're loving Toronto.
It's
incredible.
You're gonna be at Canadian Music Week this year, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Yep.
So. I think if you need a moderator, I think I need to do that. Just letting you know, we're putting together, I don't know if I'm a host, a day host there, right? For Canadian Music Week. So I wear a lot of hats and do a bunch of different things, but I'm working on putting a panel together right now. I just don't know what the hell it's going to be on yet. I just know some artists and some people that are, and so I got to kind of get that in. But hey, if you ever need somebody to moderate it, I mean, I just ask the questions. You guys have all the answers. So I'm just
letting
you know.
Hey man, well, you're really good at it and you have a ton of experience. So absolutely, man, I'll keep that in mind.
What do you listen to today? Like what piques your interest musically? Like, you know, when you're just kind of sitting there and having a glass of wine, what the hell do you put on?
Yeah, man, absolutely. You know what? Times have changed, you know, big time, because back in the day, you know, I'd hang out and, you know, you're back in the CD times, you pick a CD and you put it in, right? So now with Spotify, it's just like, there's so much out there. I usually just put on a playlist or I kind of keep up with what's new. So I'll just see, you know, the top 10 newest records out kind of thing in whatever genre. But to be honest with you, you know, I do a lot of pop and rock and some country. But I like to kind of like shift my listening time to other things. So like, I love listening to jazz. I love like really heavy hip hop, which is crazy. Because I just don't work on it. So my ears just love the sounds that, you know, that I get from listening to those types of genres. So that's, I kind of try to break away from the artists that I'm and the genres that I work with at work. So yeah, that's kind of what I do.
So you work with a lot of young artists, I presume are new artists and maybe let's talk about the challenges in working with them. I'm sure as people come to you that don't have a lot of experience that rely on your experience, what kind of things are you seeing from those artists and what kind of challenges do you get from them?
Yeah. So like, you know what, a lot of the challenges don't really have to do much with theory. I think the biggest problem that I run into with young artists are that they can't be like vulnerable. Like it's hard for them to like really, you know, talk about their emotions and like really get in touch with their inner self. I think that is the problem with new artists. It's like, they want to talk about these, you know, love or whatever you want to write about, but you know, surface level is one thing, but when you really connect with what you're really feeling inside is different. But, and I think a lot of these youths coming, you know, they're attached to their screens and it's just kind of a different way that, you know, young people are living right now. And when I'm talking to them, the social aspect of getting those emotions out, I think is very difficult for them. So that's one challenge for me is trying to get them to really get in touch with what they're trying to say on a deeper level. So
what to you makes a good song?
Like,
is it just the message the lyrics have? Is it the melody? Is it when, like, what when you listen to a song, what makes you say that's a good song? Whether it's a hit or not, it doesn't matter, but just what do you think is a good song?
For me, everything is personal for everybody because music at the end of the day is subjective.
Right.
But, you know, obviously if it reminds me of something that I listened to back in the day, so if it's got a little bit of an 80s spice to it or something that reminds me of a vibe that I used to listen to with great lyrics and great melodies, you know, that's important to me. A good singer, a good vocalist is very important. A lot of the songs out there sound very similar. The vocals, you know, a lot of the guys and the girls, they almost sound the same, almost in young pop, you know what I mean? So gone are the days where you'd have guys like Sting or Bryan Adams or, you know, Eddie Vedder or someone that sounds just completely different because everything's so, you know, boxed up nowadays. So, you know, I like different sounding vocals for me.
So I'm in a band and I want to hire you as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know what, we've got some good stuff going on here and we're going to come and see you. What advice do you give to those people before they even have a conversation with you? Do you have like a checklist that says, you know, before I'm going to take on this project, I need to know this?
There's lots of questions I ask in meetings. So like what happens is usually if I connect with another artist or band, the first thing I like to do is like, okay, let's meet up. I'd like to meet you. I want to see what kind of a vibe you've got and see if you dig what I have to say. And I usually ask a ton of questions like, have you worked with a producer before? That's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
How many times you've been in the studio and how was it? How did you record those tracks? How many songs have you written? Who writes the songs? You know what I mean? Are you open to, you know, changing the songs? So there's a lot of, you know, questions I kind of like to put out there because some people, you know, are open to change and some people aren't. So it's important to know who is.
What do you think? I'm sure you've seen it, but what do you think of the launch and how they did that with a producer and then of an artist and then Scott? And, what do you think of that whole vibe?
Yeah, like, okay, so, I mean, like, okay, to be honest with you, and I know this is so bad, I haven't watched one yet.
Oh, sorry, I know, I just figured probably you did, I don't know.
I know, but I get the gist of it, I do. And I've spoke to a lot of people about it, and I have a lot of friends that have friends that are in it, and I think it's great. I think anything that promotes young artists that are unknown on a scale, like on a major TV scale or whatever, I think is a great thing. You know, I think it's like every show they have a new winner. Am I right on that?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. So it's kind of like you have that small amount of time to really like, you know, keep the buzz going, you know, and I hope that's enough time for the bands and the artists to actually, you know, but we'll see if they come back for a second season. And I'm really going to be surprised. I want to see who can really kind of use this as a launching pad.
Right. And for their career. My understanding is that it is now gone global. Like there's now going to be the launch in the UK. There's going to be the launch in the States. There's going to be, so apparently through Bell Media or whoever with Scott, they've made this something that's not just going to be in Canada here, but it's actually going to go global. So, but I know what you're saying because a lot of these shows, I mean, there's very few people that really make it to the highest level, the Carrie Underwoods, the Kelly Clarksons, you know, I mean, think of how many people were on American Idol that were amazing that you just totally don't even know who they are anymore, you know? And on the other side of it, you look like a guy like Chris Daughtry, and I'm a rock guy. So, I mean, when Daughtry didn't win, but I mean, when he became pretty much a global star, I mean, he was one of the few that was able and still is able to stay up there. But there's very few of these artists, even after they win something, that are able to sustain the momentum to keep being a star, right?
Yeah, it's really tough out there, especially winning a contest, because a lot of like heavy music fans' credibility is almost out the window because it's like, well, you know, he got kind of,
bypassed all of the regular things you're supposed to do.
Yeah. But you know what? Again, time is changing. And the thing is, music, I'm noticing, man, and especially in the past few years, music is moving quickly. You know, you can have a song and people are scrolling down a newsfeed for them to kind of just visit your like page or your Insta page. Like, that's what you're really hoping for, right? Is to gaining those fans. So, you know, it's a quick moving industry right now. So it's good that, you know, recording is a lot more affordable than it used to be because content is very important.
So you're obviously you have a web page, AndreKadenBlack.com, and Are you taking on new opportunities with bands, or do you kind of?
Yeah. I'm always open. I'm always looking for that band that wants to take their career to the next level and work with our team. You know, it's absolutely.
And you're on Instagram.
On Instagram, yeah. And I'm on Facebook, but I don't really use it as much. I don't know if many people are using Facebook anymore as much as Instagram.
I know Instagram's huge. I can't believe it. Like, I like Facebook, don't get me wrong, but Instagram to me is just it's quick, because it's quick, right? Like, sometimes on Facebook you got to read through a lot of crap and go through.
Yeah.
And I post a lot of crap, so I know. Yeah. But I mean, when you're on Instagram, it's pretty simple. Where there's a fucking picture and then there's a comment. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, so it's cool. But I think we need a new platform to come and kind of re-energize everything. So we'll see what happens, right?
Absolutely. So I appreciate your time today. Anything else you want to chat about before you go?
Honestly, I'm just really grateful of you having me on here, and I love the work you do, and just keep it up, man. Honestly,
that's awesome. It's funny how this world connects, eh? When you know someone, who knows someone who knows someone. And I think the Mesa thing is funny, because I actually forgot about that, like I said, and then to use it in the intro, and I know the guys very well, and
awesome.
I even talk to them about working with them on some other levels and that as well, because they're such good guys, and I love their indie punk vibe, and they're very talented and all that. So Andre Caden,
totally.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Visit Shane on Facebook at Shane C. Neal Media Personality, on Instagram at ShaneCNeal.com.